Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at nashvillepublicradio.org.
This week's edition of Says You, today from Lincoln, Massachusetts, an historic village with a reputation for rebellion. Try this one, Paula.
Refuse. Just refuse.
Okay.
Occupy Lincoln.
Occupy Lincoln. Today we'll tackle the tough issues of our time, a look at our economy with words.
You've gotten yourself out of debt, and you want to buy that color TV, and as my son pointed out to me, all televisions are color TV now. Dad, don't use that reference anymore.
But don't worry, we'll take time to fondly reminisce about things like the time we shared the bill with a bodybuilding competition in Georgia.
But then we went to the bodybuilding show, which was dazzling.
I have to tell you, Francine has not been the same since that night.
I keep oiling myself, but nothing happens.
Right. Says You is next.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. Oklahoma Governor Mary Fallon is getting ready for a visit from President Obama. He's traveling to the tornado-hit town of Moore today, and Fallon says she's looking to him to help navigate the federal bureaucracy.
The ability to get through red tape, the ability to get the FEMA funds in here quickly, and to get the services that our citizens need to help them recover through this terrible disaster.
Governor Fallon on the ground in Moore this morning, speaking on CNN's State of the Union. President Obama is traveling to Oklahoma today to inspect the damage from last week's tornado, which left 24 people dead. NPR's Jim Hawk reports the president will meet with victims from ravaged communities.
The president will reprise his role as chief comforter during a trip that comes after similar visits in recent months to New Jersey after Hurricane Sandy, Connecticut after the Newtown school shootings, Boston after the Marathon bombing, and Texas after a fertilizer plant explosion. Obama, who has offered whatever federal assistance Oklahoma may need, will see firsthand the federal, state, and local response to the devastating tornado that tore through the southeastern suburbs of Oklahoma City on Monday. The president also plans to visit with families that were impacted by the tragedy, as well as thank the many first responders who came to their aid. Jim Hawk, NPR News.
Forecasters expect the weather around San Antonio to improve later today, a day after torrential rain swamped parts of the city with flash floods. Two people were killed, and authorities are still searching for a teenager who was swept away while trying to cross a stream. Turning now to Afghanistan, where the head of the International Organization for Migration in Kabul says he and his staff will be at work tomorrow despite the fact that their offices were destroyed in a Taliban attack. NPR Sean Carberry reports that several IOM staff and security guards were wounded, one of them critically.
A number of IOM staff were trapped for 2 hours as Taliban militants rained grenades and gunfire on their compound. Militants battled Afghan forces for another 6 hours after the civilians had been evacuated. IOM Chief Richard Danziger says the Taliban claimed they were attacking a CIA facility.
We are absolutely mystified as to why we would have been the target of this attack.
Danziger says it's clear the Taliban targeted their compound, but it's not clear whether they were intentionally targeting the IOM.
As long as we don't know whether there really is a reason, we shall continue working.
The IOM has helped resettle more than 10,000 Afghan refugees since the fall of the Taliban. Sean Carberry, NPR News, Kabul.
The Syrian government says it's agreed in principle to take part in an international conference in Geneva next month aimed at ending the country's civil war. Syria's foreign minister says he believes the conference is a good opportunity to find a political solution. He spoke after talks with his Iraqi counterpart in Baghdad today. Secretary of State John Kerry due to meet with Russia's foreign minister tomorrow to work out details of the conference. You're listening to NPR News from Washington. British police have arrested three more suspects in the killing of an off-duty soldier on a London street. That brings to at least seven the number of people who have been detained in connection with what authorities suspect was a terrorist attack by Islamic extremists. No charges have been filed yet. French police, meanwhile, investigating whether the stabbing of a French soldier west of Paris was a copycat crime. However, President François Hollande is cautioning against jumping to conclusions. The French soldier was wounded in the neck, but his life is not in danger. The French French government is preparing for possible violence during protests today against the new same-sex marriage law. NPR's Eleanor Beardsley reports that the Interior Minister is looking at banning a far-right group that threatened public officials over the law.
Interior Minister Manuel Valls said he didn't take the threats by far-right group French Spring lightly. The group has been a radical fringe element in the latest protests against gay marriage, which have degenerated into clashes between youths and police firing tear gas. Though the bill authorizing same-sex marriage and adoption became law on May 18th, a hardened opposition to it says it will not back down. The continuing protests have caused a split in the mainstream Conservative Party, with some members calling for them to end. A poll shows that 62% of the French people would like to see the protest movement end now that the bill is law. Eleanor Beardsley, NPR News, Paris.
Indianapolis native Ed Carpenter is the poll sitter for today's Indy 500. A field of 33 drivers will take the flag under what are expected to be sunny skies and near-perfect race conditions. Among them are two trying to join the exclusive club of four-time winners, Dario Franchitti and Elio Castroneves. I'm Giles Snyder, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, supporting the Future of Nursing Campaign for Action in 50 states at rwjf.org.
Welcome to Says You, a game of bluff and bluster, words and whimsy. Now, join our panelists and your host, Richard Scherr.
Thank you. Thank you. From Bemis Hall in Lincoln, Massachusetts, welcome to Says You, a simple game with words played by two teams, the first of which sits stereo right. For 30 years, he's been the actor's actor, the consummate professional. He's been in everything you've ever seen, Mr. Tom Kemp. I've known him 30 years, man and boy. And boy, us men had fun back then. Barry Nolan. And for 30 years, I have been trying to pay her back for getting me my first job in show business. And I'll pay her back if it takes all night. Miss Francine Akbar. And who leads tonight?
I think Miss Francine.
No.
Mr. Tom.
Mr. Tom.
Tom will be the captain. To my left, team two. I'd heard of his legendary feats long before I met him, but I never held that against him. Arnie Reisman. I met her soon after Arnie, when it was already too late to stop the damage. Paula Lyons. And believe it or not, I met her the day we began this show and have been honored by her company ever since. Miss Carolyn Faye Fox. Okay, who's going to step up this week?
I will be the captain, yes.
Carolyn will lead. Correct answers are worth 10 points or whatever fraction thereof deemed appropriate. We always advise new listeners to grab a pen and paper. Let's begin. You know, if you've ever come out this way, a funny thing happens. You start driving through the most beautiful country you've ever seen, overwhelmed by this sense of wanting to get back to the land, and all of a sudden you pass a large barn with a big peace sign on the side. Yes, they are stardust out here, and remember fondly all the trappings of hippiedom. 10 points if you can help us remember the real story behind these icons of the counterculture. Carolyn, what does the peace sign look like, and why does it look like that?
It looks like a circle.
Yes.
With one vertical line bisecting it, and then two other little lines forming two triangles around that.
That is true. That's 5 points. Why does it look like that?
Because that's the way it was meant to look.
Yes, it was. Can you imagine why?
Arnie?
It was really
Arnie.
Of course, who wants a circle with a P in the middle? I mean, it's like,
I don't know the answer to that.
What is it symbolize?
There was,
Is it Native American or something?
No, it is not.
It used to go back to Rome.
Greece?
No, this goes back to 1958, actually. So
there was still a Rome then.
Is it something atomic? Does it have something to do with the A-bomb?
It does.
Very much so. It's like
so
the atomics. Yes.
But crossing it out?
You're going to love this when you find this
because
out.
Because the atomic sign was bright yellow and black, right?
Yes.
And well, it had those same divisions.
They were playing off that. That's not exactly what it is. I'm going to give you... you get 6 points so far. You've done pretty well. Tom, can you help out?
Wasn't it Bertrand Russell who actually came up with this? And it's a symbol of a intercontinental bomber.
Ballistic missile, yes.
The bomber that dropped the atomic bomb.
Does anyone in the audience know where this comes from?
Semaphore.
That is exactly
semaphore.
Right.
Semaphore.
From the audience. Ah. It is semaphore. In 1958, Gerald Holtam created the logo for a march on Britain's Atomic Weapons Research Establishment, which is where it came from. It is a hybrid of the semaphore letters N and D, which stood for Nuclear Disarmament.
Bertrand Russell was at that.
Yes, he was
at that event.
I think the D is the vertical line. Is that right? And the N is the two arms that go out at a 45 degree angle. But semaphore, the flag language, that's where it comes from. Nuclear disarmament.
So now is the audience ahead?
The audience is always ahead.
Always ahead.
Okay.
Try this one, Tom. What was the true innovation of earth shoes?
I tried to wear them once.
Yes.
I just kept backing up. I put on the shoes and walked right into a wall backwards. They were
negative
the heel,
heel
was lower
negative
than,
heel.
Than
the front.
That is
it's
exactly
meant
right.
It's meant to duplicate the way that your foot would stand if you were standing on soft earth.
Actually, on sand.
On sand?
But that's 10 points. Excellent. Yeah. That was the innovation.
Yes.
It is the negative heel, which the heel is lower than the rest of the sole. That produced the same footprints as the footprints you left on sand. Arnie, what was the inherent design flaw in mood rings?
That they made them.
The inherent design flaw, having never had one.
Oh, you never had a mood ring?
Never had a mood ring.
Oh, okay.
Not that I'm aware of.
I think the inherent design flaw is it didn't predict your mood at all.
Right.
Well, it didn't.
It's supposed to register your mood, not predict it.
Yes. Yeah. Do you know how that worked?
I think it had to do with the heat, your body heat.
Yeah, right, your body heat.
Yeah.
What's the inherent design flaw in
this? It would wear out.
Yeah.
No, it didn't. That's not it.
It fell off your
finger. Well, that heat does not have that much to do with mood.
Well, certainly your body heat doesn't have much to do with it. That's for sure.
Well, what happens?
And the bright sun, would it register something completely contrary?
How many points?
Weather.
What do you figure?
Two.
Thank you.
Excuse me. Two
like
points,
seven.
But you don't know what the answer is yet. So I really tough.
Obviously was controlled by the outside weather.
What? 10 points. I'm going
to
give you the 10 points. Good job. The whole thing theoretically was that they responded to temperature, and that as your body got hot and colder, it would change color and thus reveal your mood. Trouble is that body temperature usually fluctuates less than 1 degree.
No. All right.
Up and down, whereas the outside temperature, as we know, fluctuates more than that.
Ah.
Did a good job of measuring what time of year it was.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Try this one, Francine. What is a dashiki?
Oh, a dashiki is a loose garment.
Yes.
That has no buttons, has a sort of a V neck, often embroidered.
Yes.
African, I think.
Often colorful print.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yep. Often colorful print. And it, you know, was a symbol of relaxed hipness. And solidarity with the people.
Yeah, it 10 points. Very good. Yes, that's... I always think of Jim Brown as wearing a dashiki. But Marion Barry, I remember seeing... Remember Marion Barry?
He made a dashiki look good.
Yeah, he did. But it became a symbol for the cultural struggles of that era, and you described it very nicely. So 10 points for that. Paula, what the heck were love beads, and what was that all about?
I really don't know. It was the shells that really got me kind of crazy. Yeah. Love beads, I mean, it must have been just a fad started. It was part of the costume of the era, right? If
yes,
you were young and hip, you wore long beads, whether you were male or female, and probably came from the summer of love out there in San Francisco. For all I know, I was much too young.
And of course, it symbolized...
It's free love, baby.
Yeah, it was the tramp stamp of the 1960s.
Tramp stamp.
That's 10 points.
Tramp stamp.
It's exactly right. And finally, Barry, what do you know about the inner workings of a lava lamp?
Oh. A lava lamp. A lava lamp is this thing you could watch for hours.
Right. And say, oh, wow.
Yeah. Oh, a lava lamp was... a lamp that had a bulb in the bottom, and on top of it, there was an elongated thing that held a usually colored liquid, and inside that liquid was some kind of waxy, flexible thing
that would
sort of change due to the heat of the bulb going up through the water, and it would sort of go. And if you watched it for hours and hours, you became a total idiot.
10 points is exactly right. That's what it is.
And here we are today.
Yeah.
I don't know how you knew it was wax inside. Did you ever have any experience with surgery on these things?
Cheap television.
Yeah, that's it. Well, if you had ever knocked it over... You would know that it's a a tapered glass bottle filled with oil and glycerol, containing a translucent mixture of wax and carbon tetrachloride.
Lovely.
Wow, man!
I love carbon tetrachloride, and I don't even know why.
The original screensaver,
right? Yeah.
It was the brainchild, incidentally, of Edward Craven Walker.
And where is he now?
I don't know, but they still make them. They still make lots of them.
They do.
Let's go on to round two, which is played with a little musical help from our friends, Southern Rail. It's the first of the Says You Bluffing rounds. Carolyn, each of you will receive a card defining a word. Only one has the actual definition. The other two have cards that say, please bluff. Those poor souls have a few seconds to make up a definition on the spot good enough to fool Tom's team. There are 10 points up for grabs here to Tom, if he can find the bluffer, or to you, Carolyn, if he can't. Take a few seconds to come up with a definition for the word nephilist. N-E-P-H-A-L-I-S-T. Nephilist. Folks?
Our next live performance is in Port Townsend, Washington, Friday, June 21st. It's a community Says You to benefit the Clemente Course for the Humanities, featuring Says You team captains and local denizens vying for verbal supremacy. Tickets, information, and details are available at saysyou.net. That's S-A-Y-S-Y-O-U. We hope you'll be there for an evening of wit and wordplay as the whole town turns out to support community education. That's Friday, June 21st in Port Townsend, Washington. A live performance of Says You.
North Carolina lightning, silver thread across the sky. North Carolina lightning, thunder rolling from on high.
Says You returns after this from home.
This week in This American Life, the whole national conversation about climate change has been stuck for years now. Everybody knows where they stand. Everybody's heard all the arguments before. But some new things are happening out there. Our Pledge to You, a program about climate change, and we will not mention solar panels, Eskimo fishing villages, polar bears, polar ice caps, the word Greenland. That's this week.
Saturday afternoons at 1 and Sunday evenings at 6.
Father's Day coming up. What to get the old man? Something fun, quick, completely maintenance-free. Wait a minute. That sounds like Says Us, the scripts and quips of Says You. Two volumes from our first two seasons. Scripts from 40 shows. The ultimate way to occupy the kids on the drive to Elmira. And not a tie. You can find out more about this thoughtful gift alternative at saysyou.net. That's S-A-Y-S-Y-O-U. And while you're there, why not contribute a question to the show? Because frankly, Phil and I are hitting a dry spell.
Don't let me ever think of leaving. Scary home if I try. Come the morning, I'll be home in the mountains that I love. My Carolina home. My Carolina home.
That was Southern Rail. Help me thank Jim Muller, Sharon Horovitz, Rich Stoman, and John Rock. Thanks, guys. We give it. Oh, yeah. Let's take a moment and thank our scorekeepers. That's Evan and Kayla Goldstein. Thank you very much, you guys, for keeping the score. We have had a few moments with the word Nephilist. We will go first to a smiling Carolyn Fay Fox.
Well, after much consideration, I've decided to read what's on the card.
Ah, okay.
Nephilist, someone who designs body armor.
That was a particularly derisive laugh, madam. Thank you very much. I appreciate right. that.
Female.
Someone who designs body armor. Okay, is a Nephilist. Could be. Or it could be something else. Arnold?
I'll read what's on the card. Someone who's been institutionalized for spending too many hours with a lava lamp. No. Close to it, though. It's actually a guy who's sworn off drinking.
A guy who's sworn off drinking.
A former hippie, no doubt.
A former hippie, yeah.
Yeah.
Sworn off drinking, you are a Nephilist. Yeah. Okay, could be. Or it could be something else. Paula?
A Nephilist actually is someone who denies the existence of a spiritual life.
Someone who denies the existence of spiritual life. That could be it. It could be the guy who's sworn off drinking, or it could be someone who designs body armor, which I'm sure is sounding a lot better to you, madam, isn't it? It's one of those three, and the choice, Tom, is yours.
Boy. What do you got, guys? I like Barry, I liked your idea, and they didn't come up with it.
Well, which was?
We were looking at the root of this neph, which goes with nephrologist, who's a kidney specialist, followed by A-list. So Tom and I had figured out that this was a word that applies to celebrity kidneys.
Evidently, we tossed
we
that
were
one
wrong.
Aside
that's
early on.
It.
So much for the reasoning aspect of Says You. That doesn't work.
Yeah.
So let's go to guessing. How about you, Francine?
Well, I told them there was no point in trying to reason it out. Is it Under Armour?
Under Armour.
I'm not. I don't know how that works.
I'd go with the guy who swears off drinking.
I would exclude Paula's because I think she was going down the road of nihilism or something like that.
We rejected kidneys early on, I'll tell you that.
You want to go with the drinking?
I'm thinking the drinking.
We're
thinking it's Arnie.
They're all thinking drinking, Arnie. Every one of them thinks that a Nephilist is a guy who's sworn off drinking. Is that in fact what it is?
Nephilist. The guy who's sworn off drinking.
That's exactly what it is.
There you go.
Yeah, it's starting to get too hip for me here. We're going to have to work on this a little bit. Let's go on to round three. Speaking of icons, as we were earlier, please give us the précis on the following styles. Carolyn, what is meant by the paso doble style?
Paso doble.
As opposed to impaso doble.
Exactly.
It's a dance.
It is.
A pasa doble is a dance, and it's not completely unlike tango. It's a little bit like adagio and tango, a pasa doble, no?
It has that type of movement. Can you imagine why it has those kind of movement?
You pass by each other when you're doing this dance.
Well, they definitely
fling each other about.
They definitely pass by each other, and there's a reason for that.
One of them is a bull.
He is exactly right. 10 points. That is exactly right.
All right.
This is the dance style often found in ballroom competitions and, you know, obviously on television, that derives from the movements and music of bullfighting. And that's what it is. It means double step. It's fast, very fast dance. That's the Paso Doble style.
Somewhere.
Try this, Tom. What might be meant by the Greco-Roman style?
Oh.
Well, that's wrestling.
It is wrestling.
And it is it's what is done in the intercollegiate sports and in the Olympics. Not my friends who are members of the Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame.
No, it's nothing.
There's no punching. There's no hitting. It's
No chairs.
No chairs.
No chairs.
No chairs.
Yes, a distinct lack of chairs.
Right. No talk show involved.
No managers jumping into the ring and things like that. Yeah.
The Greco-Roman differs from collegiate wrestling in that Greco-Roman, you can get points for tossing somebody off their feet.
Well, you know something? That's close enough. Very good, Barry. That's exactly right. It does have its roots in classical Greece, as the name implies. But it's modern wrestling. The wrestling you see in college is freestyle wrestling. That involves going for the legs and everything like that. In Greco-Roman wrestling, you can't do that. It only permits holds above the waist. So if you're going to take somebody down, you have to literally throw them down. You have to find a way to twist them and throw them down to the mat. So that's the difference between that style and freestyle. Very good. Try this one, Arnie. What might be meant by the Kundalini style?
Yoga.
Well, I'm glad we've narrowed the area down. Now can you tell me a little bit about it?
Quiet yoga.
Nice, quiet yoga, yeah.
It's the kind of yoga pants you wear.
Is there such a thing as yoga pants?
Of course.
Oh, yes, of course.
Sure. Kundalini yoga pants.
Kundalini yoga pants.
You got to stop doing that nude yoga.
So the 7-year-old bathing suit that I've been wearing for the last 5 years is not...
Okay.
This isn't related to temperature, is it?
It is not. I know what you're going for, hot yoga. Okay. No, it's not that.
I think this is a very slow-moving, rhythmic form of yoga.
Well, almost couldn't be worse. Almost couldn't be more...
It's a very fast-paced.
Yeah, right. It's yoga mixed with
athletic.
Aikido.
Well, I'm going to give you 5 points because you got to the yoga, but anyone on the other side know a little bit more about this?
No, and I can't see my wife signaling me, so...
She's doing
yoga. I thought
yoga.
It was very meditative.
Well, in a sense, it is.
This is the form of yoga that involves lots of Italian food.
Yeah, right.
No.
No, that's pesto dobles.
What do you say I put an end to this as quickly as possible?
Yeah, why not?
It is the emphasis of Kundalini yoga is on the breath.
Yes.
And the alignment of the body.
But it's best yoga is.
It employs rapid, repetitive movements rather than positions held for a long time. Oh. And teachers will often leave the class in chanting.
Oh, yeah.
Try this one, Francine. I'll be stunned if you get this one. What is the Marcel style?
Well, it's a hair wave.
Can you describe it?
Close to the head.
Yes.
Kind of fingerprints. Very 1920s looking.
You know something? She's exactly right. Yeah. Exactly right. How would you know about a hairstyle from the 1920s?
Oh, we all know those things.
Okay.
We know those things. I took a break. Carolyn and I so often go to the Greco-Roman wrestling team.
Yeah, right. Where all the guys have their hairs Marcel.
But I do want to tell you that one time we were in Atlanta, Georgia, and they're all going in different directions. And Barry and Francine decide to go to the, what was it? The bodybuilding
championship.
Bodybuilding championship.
Dazzling.
I have to tell you, Francine has not been the same since that night.
I
I keep oiling myself, but nothing happens.
Right. Show them your cannons.
It is the Marcel wave is a stylish wave given to the hair by means of the heated curling irons and named for Francois Marcel.
Hello.
These last two are really hard, but I want to see if you can, if anybody knows about this. Try this one, Paula. The Googie style. G-O-O-G-I-E style. The Googie style.
Not a clue.
Not a clue.
The Googie style.
As in Googie Withers?
Who is Googie Withers?
I don't know.
Well, then, yeah, like Googie Withers.
Oh, okay. And it's not some...
You know what? I want you to just put in your mind the Jetsons.
The Jetsons? Like Judy Jetson's hair?
Futuristic.
That whole space age sort of look?
Can you think of where that may have started and what...
Comic books? Are we going back?
In the 50s?
Googly-o-glue.
Yeah, actually even the late 40s. The late 40s, early 50s. Okay.
Barney Google?
No.
So,
you know what? I'm going to give you five points for being good sports.
Space suits that were developed pre-space program?
Anyone on the other side? No.
There's something to do with Flash Gordon?
In an odd way, there are elements of that. Anybody in the audience, are you familiar with the Googie style?
Googie. Well,
it is. This offshoot of futurist architecture came from Southern California. Where
really?
Else?
Googie.
Southern California. And think about commercial buildings like motels and coffee shops.
Why do you think it's called mid-century modern?
With fins and everything. In fact, the name Googie was one of the first coffee shops that had this style, and it was named after that.
Palm Springs.
The Las Vegas
full of
sign.
It.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
That
right,
kind
right.
of stuff.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay.
Never heard Googie.
Well, that's the Googie style, so now we all learned a little something.
Okay.
And finally, Barry, try this one. In honor of the building in which we now sit, the Federalist style.
The Federalist style is kind of blocky and, I was going to say ugly, but we're in this nice building. It's a lovely place and a great setting filled with nice people.
Classical.
No, I think it was sort of squarish and squat and borrowed from the classical and
brick and white columns.
What?
Brick and white columns.
Brick and white columns.
And you want to give a guess as to about when this started?
That would have been about the time that the Federals.
Federalist Papers were written.
No, the Federalist Papers?
Oh, yeah.
About the time the Federalist Papers
were
written.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to give you the 10 points. Yeah, nice job.
What was that?
Well, it's the late 1700s, early 1800s, really. It covers that time period. But the Federalist style was meant to be sort of actually an honor to the classical Greek and the theories of democracy and all that, and having recently adopted a democracy, that's why it all came about.
You see a lot of it in Philadelphia.
You
see
yes,
a
you
ton
do.
Of it in Boston.
Yes, you
and you
do.
See a ton of it in Charleston, South Carolina. And that Federalist period architecture, and it's not squat.
It's not squat.
It was meant to be grand.
But it was lack of ornamentation. It was.
It has columns.
Well, no, I mean, you know, the Victorians.
Would you consider the Massachusetts State House to be a Federalist period? You think so?
Really?
And And certainly the building we're in is. So, yeah, good description. And you get the 10 points. Thanks.
This week's Spotlight Round comes at the request of Tammy Thompson of Lincoln, Nebraska. Tammy writes, "My dad is a great fan of Says You. He never misses the show. This month, he turns 100 years old. Do you have a round that celebrates fathers that you could dedicate to him? His name is Joseph." Well, happy birthday, Joseph, from all of us at Says You. We're proud to honor you with a round from our fifth season, Father's Day, in fact, when Tony Khan and Carolyn Faye Fox's father, David Berg, joined us for a pop quiz. The following men have all been labeled the father of something. From the clues in verse provided, please tell me, father of what? Carolyn, Luca Pacioli, Pacioli, and the clue? He's a man who made his name with expertise in the ledger domain.
Magician.
No. In the ledger.
All right. Ledger. An accountant. The father of accounting.
He is indeed the father of accounting. Luca Pacioli is indeed the father of accounting, a 15th century Tuscan who 2 years after Columbus almost single-handedly saved mathematics from centuries of decline with his book, The Collected General Knowledge of Arithmetic, Geometry, Proportion, and Proportionality. Right. So we have Mr. we have Mr. Pacioli.
And he's spinning in his grave these days.
Well, at least he got a mention on Father's Day.
Yes, he did.
Tony, Ray Tomlinson, T-O-M... Ooh, I think someone knows this.
I used to know that.
Ray Tomlinson, T-O-M-L-I-N-S-O-N, and the clue is, now splashed with emoticons, it started with simple offs and ons.
Now splashed with emoticons, it started with the father of email, the father of... Yeah.
That's exactly right. Very good. The father of email... In 1965, MIT graduate who combined SyndMIS with SIPNet and created email.
He's known also as the alpha male.
Yeah.
And you know why he picked that at sign?
No, why?
He was looking for something to separate the name from where you were, and he said, I picked this. And someone asked him, why did you pick that little A with a circle around it? And he went, what else works? That was his only answer.
It's the simplicity, I think. Arnie? Bill Dixon, D-I-C-K-S-O-N. Bill Dixon, and the clue is 1, 2, buckle my knees, 3, 4, lose the he's.
Lose the he's?
Lose the he's, H-E-S?
Yes. Buckle my 1, 2,
the
buckle...
guy who first did neutering. What is it?
The father of neutering.
The father of neutering.
The father of neutering.
Or the, you know, whatever, father, mother of neutering.
I thought you might even have heard of Bill Dixon in the...
D-I-C-K-S-O-N?
Yes.
He's a catcher.
He is not a catcher. It's a sports-type situation.
It's a sports-type, okay.
Women's soccer.
About getting there.
Men's soccer. Women's basketball.
No.
Women's slalom.
Bowling?
Skiing.
Not bowling.
Lose the
lacrosse.
Well, I gave you the countdown and I gave you the buckle my knees. I was hoping you would come up with anybody from the audience? The father of women's boxing. Yes. Wow. He was the father of women's boxing, a fight promoter at the Hyatt Lake Tahoe, who in 1979 organized the first all-women's boxing card in the United States. Very good. Francine?
Richard?
Pick this one out for you specially.
Oh, thank you.
Joseph Armand Bombardier, B-O-M-B-A-R-D-I-E-R, and the clue, o'er the Riviere and through the Bois, get there quickly for Boxing Day.
Wow. Okay, wow. He's for Canadian. Okay, he's Canadian, eh?
The fire hydrant?
The fire hydrant?
Yes.
He's no dog.
Hold on a minute. Whitewater rafting.
Oh, whitewater rafting is close. But how many in the audience came up with the fire hydrant? I'm just curious.
Are we getting somewhere with whitewater rafting?
Actually, I got hands on that.
Just a minute. Portaging.
No. Any help from that side?
Traffic light?
No. Anybody from the audience have any clue? Absolutely.
Snowmobile.
The
snowmobile.
Of snowmobiling, the man who invented the ski-doo.
I should have known that.
Snowmobile. Wonderful.
Wow.
Or the Riviera and through the Bois to get there quickly.
Gee, that was so obvious.
It was so obvious.
Paula,
yeah.
Try this one. Kemmons Wilson. K-E-M-M-O-N-S Wilson. Gladly suffered fools did he with American planned hospitality. Oh, I think someone in
suffered fools, American planned hospitality. Did he create the motel?
Holiday Inn.
Yeah, exactly.
Holiday Inn.
This is wonderful. The father of the Holiday Inn, but also the father of modern innkeeping. He began Holiday Inns in 1952.
What's modern innkeeping?
Yeah.
Hey, I got this building. There's a couple of beds.
Indoor plumbing.
That the reason children stay free, that there's swimming pools, telephones, and soap in the bathrooms, is because of Kemmons Wilson, the father of modern innkeeping. Those were his innovations. And finally, David, Frank W. Sear, C-Y-R, Frank W. Sear,
The clue, he knew the future might be seen in Xanthic transport, Tyke to Teen.
Xanthic transport.
Yellow cab.
Ooh, yeah. Are you so yeah. close?
Oh, the banana.
No, go with taxis, limousines.
Taking something yellow that takes someone from childhood to teenage years. And yellow fever.
Come on.
You know, it was perfect right up to yellow fever.
The yellow school bus.
The yellow school bus.
Right.
Very good.
Thank you, Tony.
Being yellow. He is the father of the yellow school bus. In April 1939, he organized a conference that established national school bus construction standards, thereby reducing cost and ensuring safety.
So he's the one.
And this included the standard color of yellow for the school bus, known officially as National School Bus Chrome, by the way, the formula for which is on file at the National Bureau of Standards.
That's our spotlight round for this week. If there's a memorable moment you haven't heard in years, let us know. We'll send our crack staff into the archives and do our best to find your favorite. You can register your choice at saysyou.net. That's SAYSYOU. That's our look back. Now, back to the present.
Let's go on to round four, which is Tom's team's chance to have a little fun at Webster's expense. One of you will correctly define the following word, two will bluff. 10 points, Carolyn, if your team can find the rose among thorns. Take a few seconds to create a definition for the word perstringe. P-E-R-S-T-R-I-N-G-E. Perstringe. Folks?
Dear sweet young miss, I long to kiss, so listen close and hear me. She's not my only love, I've got another love, so she just have to share me. She's 5 foot tall, high heels and all, she already knows. She's got some competition in a composition known as Pocono.
Says you coming to our town? Where can I find old shows? Who played that music I heard last week? So many questions, all answered on our website at saysyou.net. There you can find tickets to tapings, Dally on the Daily Dispatch, or access our complete archive. You can contribute a question to the show and absorb ridicule on a national scale. This and more at saysyou.net. That's SAYSYOU.
She knows I'll never miss a chance to steal a kiss. It's the poker with her. She won't speak.
Briefly, says you pauses. We'll be right back.
Arriving at Radio Lab, a full immersion curiosity joyride.
What?
Wow.
No.
Yes.
It was like, pow!
Your body jumps.
Jumps and jumps. It's not smooth.
It's 11 million miles an hour.
Chup, 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 splat.
It was like,
what is wrong with you?
Sunday nights at 8 o'clock.
That is Southern Rail. Thanks, you guys. You have given us a little bit of time with the word perstringe. We go first to an almost scowling Tom Kemp.
Perstringe means to continue to economize beyond necessity. When you've gotten yourself out of debt and you want to buy that color TV. And as my son pointed out to me, all televisions are color TV now.
Yeah, right.
Don't use that reference anymore. And your wife says, no, we can't afford it. And you say, no, I've been working. We can afford it. That's to perstringe.
To economize beyond necessity is to perstringe. Mm-hmm. It could be. Or it could be something else. Francine?
Well, perstringe is a little bit what it sounds like. It is a step in the distillation process used in the manufacture of perfume.
A step? Ooh, we got a new out of the crowd there.
And that's like it sounds?
A step in the distillation process.
A step in making perfume is to perstringe. Okay, it could be that. Or it could be a third alternative. Barry, what do you say?
Perstringe is to continually criticize or nag. And I remembered it was actually used in the Federalist Papers, you may recall.
Yep.
It lays out that the party that controls the House of Representatives shall issue all bills that involve spending or taxation and thus gives them control of the perstringe.
I think that was an appropriate reaction, don't you?
Yep.
To perstringe is to criticize, to nag. It could be that step in the perfume-making process, or it could be to continue to economize beyond necessity. It is one of those three, and the choice, Carolyn, is yours.
I'm thinking Barry.
I'm thinking Barry.
I'm thinking Barry. One of us is lying.
Oh. Boy, that's great radio. Yeah.
Right. We have three people here who say they're thinking Barry. What kind of programming? Sounds like, we've reached that point where if it's not, it should be. Because
we like
to continually criticize and nag sounds like something.
It does. It does sound like perstringe. Yes.
Yeah, I can't believe it's a step in perfume making.
I don't believe it's a step in perfume making, and I think Tom was playing off purse strings.
Stringent,
that yeah. too.
Of course, that could mean that it's criticize. Very logical and exactly
first,
that.
Right,
but,
perfume.
Yeah.
First you fume, then you perf.
And you perf?
Yeah, I'll go along with Barry. You're the captain.
Okay, all right then. We're going with Barry.
Barry, they are going with you. They say that perstringe means to nag.
Perstringe. To continually criticize or nag.
That's what it is. You can't get it by these guys anymore. Boy, getting awful hard to fool you guys at this point. Let's close tonight. Great thanks to Jan Crotty of Cambridge, Massachusetts, for her contributions to this round of Cops and Robbers. I'll give you the name of a detective. For 10 points, please provide his or her most notable quarry. Carolyn, try this one.
All right.
Lieutenant Philip Gerard.
Philip Gerard. Come on, Paula, you recognize
that. Paula sat
that.
Bolt upright. When
Wait
I
a
said
minute.
Him.
Lieutenant Philip Gerard. I do know. Oh.
His most notable quarry, Lieutenant Philip Gerard. Her head is in her hands, ladies and gentlemen.
That sounds very familiar.
It does. It's not...
It's not the
Casablanca.
Is it a movie?
It is a movie, I think, Philip Gerard. Yeah.
Lieutenant Philip Gerard.
Oh, The Fugitive.
Whose name was?
Dr. Richard Kimball.
Yeah. 10 points. Dr. Richard Kimball is exactly right.
I I could see him.
Try this one, Tom. Superintendent Harry Snapper Organs.
You made that up.
Harry Snapper Organs.
Superintendent, I bet you there's about 20 people out there know the answer to this question. Anybody, don't say it out loud. Anybody know? I'm completely wrong, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. Yeah. Harry Snapper, Inspector Harry
Inspector
Snapper.
Harry Snapper Organs. Oh, I'm sorry. A superintendent.
Yeah. Superintendent.
Harry Snapper Organs.
I wish I had a snappy response that has something to do with organs. I don't.
Neither does the audience. Don't feel bad.
Well, I think there's one person out there that knows it.
Boy,
this is from a comic thing.
It sure is. Yes.
Dick Tracy?
No, it's not that.
No, not Dick.
No. Harry Snapper Organs.
Something to do with alligators?
No.
Yeah, a lot of alligator cop movies.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Big genre Harry back in the
Snapper
season.
Organs.
So this would be from a film?
It is from a film. That's hard to say. It's not really from a film, no.
I don't have a clue. It has something to do with
any clue on this
accordions
side?
Or something, but I
what do you think on the other side?
Is it from a comic book rather than a film?
No, it's from
The Goon Show?
Not the Goon Show.
Monty Python.
Who was
Snapper
quarry?
Organs going after?
Well, I think I'm going to have to go to the audience for
Dinsdale.
Yes.
Doug and Dinsdale Piranha.
Piranha.
The Piranha Brothers.
Nail the table to my head.
Yeah. No, nail my head to the table.
Nail my head to the table. Yes.
You know, of course he had to do that.
Yeah. Right. Yes. Right. Harry Snapper Organs.
Tells us a lot about your misspent youth.
Yes. Doug and Dinsdale Piranha, the Piranha Brothers, were rounded up by Superintendent Harry Snapper Organs. I don't know.
Okay.
Try this one, Arnie. I'm going to get some hard ones in here. Lieutenant Ilya Petrovich.
Oh.
Oh, this is... Was this in Man from U.N.C.L.E.?
No, that's Ilya Kuryakin. No. Right?
Okay, I got Ilya.
So is it Solzhenitsyn?
Lieutenant Ilya Petrovich.
Is this Raskolnikov?
It is exactly Raskolnikov. Very good, Arnold.
Okay.
10 points.
I might have gotten that if I had really thought about it.
Okay, then, Tom.
No, I get Harry Snapper Organs, and he gets Raskolnikov.
Great.
And I get the little Raskolnikovs.
Yes. Don't worry, we're not done yet. We're not done yet. Francine, Joe DeFors.
Joe DeFors.
No clue.
Maybe my teammates can help me.
Joe DeFors.
That sounds familiar.
Was played by an actor.
Yes, right? And you know, I can't tell you who the actor was. I can see the guy's face in front of me, but I can't tell you what his name is.
That means Tom should answer it.
I probably played it.
Yes, you probably did.
In 1958,
I was...
Joe DeFors.
Was he the pal, the buddy on Dragnet?
No, he was not.
But he was the buddy on...
He wasn't the buddy. He was the
he was the guy.
Guy here. He Joe was the guy.
He wasn't Sergeant Friday.
Don't say it out loud. Anyone in the audience know Joe DeFors? Couple of people, okay. Just a, Joe DeFors. Oh, it's quiet up there. I don't think they're going to get
no,
it.
No, I don't.
It's a pretty modern, certainly within living memory kind of movie.
Whose living memory?
In the 50s. It was a.
No, it's later than that. It's later. Anybody from the other side?
Film or television?
I could give you a hint. You'd probably get it right away. Should I give him a hint at the cost of 3 points?
Yeah.
Who were those guys?
Oh, that was Butch Cassidy and the Sundance
That's
Kid.
That's who it was. It was Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
And Lieutenant Joe DeFors was the head of the Pinkerton guys. It was after Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Who are those guys?
Whoa.
Yeah, I wasn't in that movie.
Forget it.
No, not that one.
Forget it.
That's Joe DeFors. You get give him 6 points for that, and that'll work out. Try this one. Oh, boy. Try this one, Paula.
Refuse. Just refuse.
Okay.
Occupy Lincoln.
Try this one, Paula. Detective Eddie Malone of the Boston Police Department, assisted by Vicki Anderson.
Detective Eddie Malone.
Of the Boston Police Department, assisted by Vicki Anderson.
It's not the Brinks job.
Thomas Crown.
Yes, is exactly right. Right on the head. Good job, Arnold.
Faye Dunaway.
Good job.
Steve McQueen.
And Barry, nothing resting on this but the whole game. See August Dupin.
Ah.
You know this? See August Dupin.
That wouldn't be somebody in a Pink Panther movie, would it?
No, it would not.
Oh. Is this the Murders in the Rue Morgue?
It is, in fact. So who was he chasing?
That guy. Who was killing people in the Rue Morgue?
Not that guy.
The gorilla.
The gorilla is exactly right. We kind of coaxed him there. What do you think?
I think 11 points.
I think four. Four and a half.
We answered the only gorilla question in the whole show.
You know.
In French.
You know, 9 points for that. We'll give him 9 points for that.
Oh!
And that means that this ends in a very happy occurrence, an 86-86 tie. Congratulations to both teams. Yeah.
Okay. Good job, Tom. Okay.
That is...
And now sudden death, Richard.
That is all we have time for this week. Thanks so much to Neil Feinberg and all the people here at Bemis Hall in beautiful Lincoln and for making it so much fun. Scher and Salk and other writers, Antonio Oliart captures the moment, and Zach Moore is our associate producer and webmaster. Our closing thought, Connie Arnott of Edmonds, Washington, challenges us to come up with a paraprostokion, which is a figure of speech in which the latter part of a sentence is surprising or unexpected. For instance, where there's a will, I want to be in it. Okay? Her contribution is, the last thing I want to do is hurt you, but it's still on my list. Okay? Thanks to Connie Arnett, and our challenge is, come up with a paraprostokion of your own, and we'll see you all next week.
Sends you again for free on any of the stations that stream our show. Just follow the High Definitions radio stations link on our website, find a convenient time, and listen again and again. For copies of this show or any other in our history, you can find downloads at SaysYou.net. Benjamin, give them the skinny.
Says You, created and produced by Pippin and Finch, Boston.
This morning's broadcast on Nashville Public Radio is made possible in part by our Producer Circle members, including Kent and Karen Weeks, and Mike Jameson and Tamara Hart. To learn more about the benefits of joining the WPLN Producer Circle, visit WPLN.org or phone 760-2021.
Puppets aren't just for kids. At the Main Library, the Nashville International Puppet Festival will host two special evening receptions and performances this June for the adult crowd. On June 20th, the Country Music Hall of Fame will host String City, Nashville's tradition of music and puppetry, an original performance by Wishing Chair Productions. On June 22nd, TPAC will host Martinis and Marionettes, an event featuring world-renowned puppeteer Philip Huber. Tickets are at NashvillePuppetFestival.com.
This is 90.3 WPLN, Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML, Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS, Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule of all our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org. It's 10 o'clock.